Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, April 18th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Allie Martin.
And I'm JJ Wahlberg.
Love for nature is respect for nature. That's the lesson the Monitor's Clara Germani took from working alongside a woman who's the beloved but firm public face of a wilderness park in Southern California.
After the torrents of March created waterfalls in normally dry canyons of Orange County, California, Laura Cohen and I were clearing brush and planting together in the native garden at Laguna Coast Wilderness Park. She could barely get a sentence out without an exclamation. Listen, a titmouse. Ka 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 ka. Hear that Cooper's hawk? Look, blue-eyed grass. Walking with Laura, the recently retired resource specialist at this glorious 7,000-acre preserve saved three decades ago from development, makes me think of a sparrow flitting through creation. She's hyper-aware, but gently ready for nature's next prize. For 16 years until last month, Laura was the beloved but firm public face of the park, creating and running the interpretive programs. She kept an eye out for succulent thieves and their innocent counterparts, children picking flowers. For dogs, don't get her started on how their presence can disturb the peace of the pocket mouse. And for rattlesnakes that slither under the Nature Center doors. She taught about plants and animals and nature's cycles, and she was inspiring. One five-year-old, whom Laura first taught at a raptor-themed family day, is now in college working with some of the country's top ornithologists. But, Laura says, I wouldn't take responsibility for it. She just had the love of it, you know? That love of it keeps Laura at the park after retirement. She's now donating her time, like me, and a legion of other volunteers for the Laguna Canyon Foundation and Orange County Parks. She taught us to clear vegetation, plant, patrol trails, and answer park phones. I asked her about Earth Day, and she offered this advice. Real love for nature is respect for nature. Revel in it, she says, but stay on the trail. Resist picking a flower. People forget that they're one of 100,000 or more doing the same thing. She says that she hoped through her job she could help people better understand and protect nature, because once it's lost, it's absolutely impossible to recreate the original living tapestry in all of its beauty and complexity. Indeed, it's because of the Lauras of this world that we will hear that titmouse.
Now, today's stories. Our first story, can warlords become statesmen? Activists working for democracy in post-coup Sudan say they've warned Western governments for years against involving military strongmen in their country's political transition.
5 days of infighting between rival generals has killed more than 180 civilians and seen airstrikes on residential neighborhoods. It's creating a scenario Sudanese activists say they have warned of for years. A 24-hour humanitarian ceasefire, brokered by the United States and others, set to go into effect Tuesday evening after three previous ceasefires failed to hold, was wobbling. With urban warfare threatening to tip Sudan into civil war, activists and analysts use fleeting internet and phone connectivity to call for an end to the violence and send the world a message. We told you so. They say the conflict is proof that democracy and civilian governance with accountability, no matter how messy, is the only path out from the bloodshed. We told the international community over and over, you cannot trust a military dictatorship and militias, says Mohammed, a member of the pro-democracy popular resistance committees. They have always been willing to burn the country down to enrich themselves and gain more power. Adds Khalid Kerr, a political analyst in Khartoum, there is a lot of serious reflection required from the international community on how they contributed to where we are today, and how they ignored the voices of so many people who are now facing the consequences. The story was reported by Taylor Luck and Amon Jordan for The Monitor.
The May 6 crowning of King Charles promises to swathe Britain in pomp and circumstance. But what does the monarchy represent to Britons today?
As Andre Stirling and his sister walk along Carnaby in central London, a glittering crown hangs over the pedestrian street. The siblings, whose parents immigrated to Britain from Jamaica, are unimpressed by May's coronation of King Charles III. "I believe in trying to create the fairest society possible," says Mr. Stirling. "And I don't think that can come about while there is somebody who, by birthright, is historically better than everybody else, and who rides around in a literal gold carriage." A March poll by YouGov suggests that 52% of Britons, like the Stirlings, are not interested in the coronation. Long-term polling reveals a decline in support for the scandal-plagued institution, particularly among millennials and Generation Z. Until now, the monarchy has endured because it has historically been stronger than the individuals within it. But some observers say that the widely loved Queen Elizabeth II became bigger than the monarchy itself. The new king's challenge is to persuade modern-day Britain that the throne is still relevant. Outside Buckingham Palace, Matt Raybould expresses confidence that Charles will be fine. "One thing we like in this country is a bit of pomp and circumstance," says the police officer from Birmingham. "It'll just give everyone an excuse to forget a little bit about everything that's going on and just have a good time together as a family and as a country." The story was reported by Stephen Humphreys in London for The Monitor.
Renewable sources of energy gain the spotlight for good reason. They are clean and increasingly cheap. But that doesn't mean nuclear power won't have a role to play, even as many older plants are being shut down.
When Germany powered down its final remaining nuclear reactors this past weekend, the news was both long anticipated and controversial. The nation followed through on its existing plan to phase out nuclear power during a long-term pivot toward greener and increasingly cost-effective sources such as solar and wind. But it did so at a time when calls are rising worldwide to give nuclear power another look. The road to a decarbonized economy, many say, will be smoothest if nuclear power isn't closed down alongside fossil fuel plants. Nuclear may produce radioactive waste, but as this story shows, it also produces a lot of the world's current electricity. And it is blamed for very few deaths compared with fossil fuels. Even in Germany, popular opinion ran against the shutoff. The Ukraine war has highlighted the importance of energy security to nations in Europe that long relied on Russia for natural gas and oil. In one recent poll, public broadcaster ARD found that 59% of Germans oppose the nuclear phase-out, while 34% support it. Ryan Norman, an energy expert at the moderate-left think tank Third Way in Washington, sees several factors driving interest in nuclear power: improving nuclear plant designs that are safer and cheaper, the world's rising urgency over climate change, and growing concerns about energy security. "You see the value of these clean, firm, reliable technologies," he says. "People see how they can anchor and secure their grids with nuclear as well as other sources." Just as Germany was shutting off its reactors, the U.S. government was extending support to Poland to potentially build new ones. Nuclear still draws plenty of skepticism. Accidents are a real risk, as the Fukushima disaster in Japan proved. Yet from Europe and the United States, and even to Japan, many nations are not hitting the off button on nuclear, which can run day and night and in all weather conditions. "People want to have strong, reliable power sources on their grid," says Mr. Norman. The story was reported by Mark Trumbull for The Monitor.
How is learning a trade keeping students, some of whom otherwise might not have pursued higher education, on a career path? The Monitor, in collaboration with six other newsrooms, is examining the challenges facing U.S. community colleges and potential solutions in a series called Saving the College Dream.
At the Nashville branch of the Tennessee College of Applied Technology, the students in the Auto Collision Repair Night class start their evening sanding, hammering, and chatting. While almost every sector of higher education is seeing fewer students registering for classes, many trade programs are booming. The students in this night class, seeking certificates and other short-term credentials, not associate degrees, are part of that upswing. Mechanic and repair trade programs saw an enrollment increase of 11.5% from spring 2021 to 2022, according to the National Student Clearinghouse. Enrollment in construction trades courses increased 19.3%, and culinary program enrollment increased 12.7%. Some trade programs are offered at community colleges, but in the same time span, overall enrollment at public two-year colleges declined 7.8%, and enrollment at public four-year institutions dropped by 3.4%, according to NSC. Many young people who are choosing a trade program over a traditional four-year degree say that they are doing so because it's much more affordable, and they see a more obvious path to a job. Training in auto collision repair made sense to Robert Nivyayo, a 19-year-old who says he can earn a credential while doing what he enjoys and without spending much time in the traditional classroom. Every new day, he says, I just get more motivated. The story was reported by Olivia Sanchez in Nashville, Tennessee, for The Monitor.
Poetry anchors us to the past and offers glimpses into the future. We celebrate National Poetry Month with three vibrant new books that challenge perceptions and broaden the landscape of poetry.
For poetry lovers, the art form appears as vibrant and unexpected as a swath of wildflowers running along a highway. Favorite poems take root and bloom in memory, resurfacing when needed, just as spring does every year. April, which is National Poetry Month, is a time to celebrate this genre. Three new books offer fascinating glimpses into 21st century America. In Above Ground, Atlantic staff writer and poet Clint Smith recounts how fatherhood has changed his life, from the time he first saw a sonogram of his son and his son's delivery, to the birth of his daughter, and how he and his wife have juggled the challenges of parenting. Award-winning performance poet Mahogany L. Brown's Chrome Valley uses direct, fearless language to present a prismatic picture of the Black female experience in America. We praise their names and the hands that write. Praise the mouth that speaks, Brown writes of previous generations. In Musical Tables, former U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins presents 125 short poems, some of which feel like haiku, brief snapshots or postcards, with just enough text to convey a mystery, question, or discovery. The brevity of the poems brings to mind early encounters with poetry, when the genre seemed almost magical. The story was reported by Elizabeth Lund for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on the inner life of Iranians. The main news out of Iran these days is how the Islamic regime has found new ways to force women to cover their heads. But the more significant news is how Iranians have changed their core beliefs, especially after this latest and harshest crackdown. A recent poll showed very few are still practicing Muslims. In cities, only a quarter of adults pray five times a day. In rural areas, only a third do. The percentage is even lower for those 20 to 29 years old. The numbers are about the same for men and women. This new mental liberation has resulted in other trends that indicate an alternative search for meaning in life. Some seek an identity in Iran's pre-Islamic culture, shown in celebrations of Cyrus the Great Day. Others celebrate Valentine's Day, which was banned in 2010. Many celebrate Nowruz, the pre-Islamic Iranian New Year, rather than the founding of the Islamic Republic, which was in 1979. More than three-quarters of Iranians who want regime change also consider religion unimportant to their lives. This leaves room for them to explore ways other than Islam to direct their lives. That could have huge implications for both the regime and the region. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Please come back tomorrow when Fahad Shah, a respected Kashmiri journalist with whom the Monitor has worked, is set to go on trial in India. Our story will look at the country's far-reaching anti-terror law and the ways it limits freedom of speech. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how receptivity to God's limitless goodness and love lifts hopelessness and fuels an expectation of progress that opens the door to healing. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Tim Malone, Jeff Turton, and J.J. Wahlberg.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.